Dunkin' Bagels. Dunkin' Bagels. Dunkin' Bagels. Smash in the coffee. Dunkin' Bagels.
Last summer, I went for a long walk with Mitch Winehouse in Camden Town. We didn't make it to the square where his daughter lived in a big white stucco house and where she died on July 23rd, 2011. We did stop at all of Amy's old haunts in Camden Town and clocked all the murals of her which pepper the streets behind grids and railings of shops. With Mitch alongside me, the statue of Amy in Camden Lot looked particularly tragic. She's so diminutive, particularly in the shadow of her big bear of a dad. Imagine standing next to a statue of your own child or anyone you have lost, knowing that this cold, moulded piece of bronze on a plinth is all there is left of them. That, of course, and for Amy, her outstanding music. Mitch and I met up again last week. In fact, he came to my house as I had just lost my mum, so I wasn't really going out. And among the many photos and films I had out on the table was a video I did with my late grandmother, Anne Shaw, who took me on a walking tour of the East End. She always loved her life there, and so did Mitch, who also grew up in the East End and shared many of my Nana's memories. He used to take Amy to the East End a lot. On that walk last summer, we spoke about the impending 10th anniversary. And as we sat together again, I asked if that 10th anniversary of his daughter's death was just as significant for him as for others.
Well, they're significant for other people. I don't think they're particularly significant to me because I think about Amy all the time. You know, I don't necessarily dwell on the past. But I don't need a 10th anniversary to remind me about my daughter.
Do you wake up and think about her? I mean, like in the morning.
Look, first of all, when you're at this stage, in the early stage of your grief, this applies to a lot of people. I mean, I didn't think I would be able to survive. I thought to myself, well, this is it. I wasn't going to kill myself or anything like that. I just thought, how can I get through this? You know, mentally and physically, I was a wreck. And you do. You don't realise how strong you are mentally and physically. And you do recover. And as time goes by, time is a great healer. So for the first year, I couldn't listen to Amy singing. I just break down in tears. And then it gradually eases. And now, after 10 years, I can even watch her on a video. So, you know, the mind helps you get used to things. Of course, it doesn't mean that you're not still grieving, because I believe people grieve all their life. You know, whoever passes away, your grandparents, you know, you grieve, but you continue with your life. And that's what happens. Well, some people can't continue. Some people are completely debilitated by grief. Luckily, that didn't happen to us. So we're able to go about our business with the foundation and personally, you know, without breaking down in tears all the time, and able to share stories about Amy that are frankly hilarious. You know, I mean, she was a joker. And Amy wouldn't want us to be grief-stricken. I remember somebody went to a psychic, not me, a friend of mine, and there is no way in the world that the psychic could have known that this person was a friend of mine. No way. And she said, I've got Amy Winehouse here who's got a message for her dad. And I've got the recording, and she wrote it down, transcribed it. She said, I don't like seeing my dad's face when he's crying.
Oh, bless.
You know, I mean, there's a number of things. I mean, how did the clairvoyant know that this person was a friend? You know, so anyway.
But you believe in all of that,
don't
you?
I do believe it. I do believe in it. And, you know, so if I feel like crying, I cry. If, you know, but I can get through the day. I can get through the day without breaking down.
You've got a 6-year-old grandson. How yeah. much do you have you talked to him about Amy?
I talked to him a lot about Amy. You know, he, funnily you should say that, because he was doing the kids at his school or in his class, they were all talking about people that they admire. And he said, I'd like to talk about my auntie Amy. And he spoke about Amy as the person that he admires most. And I thought, you know, that's because my son and my daughter-in-law, they kind of kept him away from that to a certain extent. I've often wondered what he thinks about all of that, you know, because he didn't know Amy personally. You know, but even when he was 2 years old, I'd say, who's that? He'd go, Amy. And he'd kiss the picture and everything else. So,
because losing a child is, I mean, you know, I mean, I don't, like you say, you talk about grief, but in the scale of when you lose a child, that's as big as it gets in terms of...
Well, you don't, you know, I don't want to find out what it's like to lose my wife. Who, I don't know. And the people that have been married for 70 years, what's it like for them?
Yeah.
That can't be a bed of roses, can it? And grief is a very personal thing. One person's grief is not another. You know, people should never say, I know how you feel. Even for people who have lost a child, and the one thing I never say to them is, I know how you feel. I don't know how they feel.
Do people ask you for advice on how you cope? Because that's a big, that coping mechanism. And you know, I mean, like, I've met you now today. I've just lost my mum. So, and I know how close Amy was to your mum.
Yeah.
And how important your mum was to her and how important she was to you. So, you know, I'm just, like you say, at the beginning of it, and have no idea how to cope.
Well, you seem to be doing okay.
Today.
Well, you just said it. I mean, the worst thing that you can do is suppress your feelings. I remember when my father died, you know, to me, I've been sitting shivering my whole life. My dad died when I was 16. He was 43. How awful is that? And I remember my uncles, who were all lovely men, my grandfather even saying to me, stop crying now, you're the man of the house. I mean, can you imagine today telling people to stop crying? They have to cry. That is the grieving process. If you don't cry, you're storing things up for the future. And that's what's happened with my son, Alex. You know, he kind of buried it all. And he's now really having to deal with a lot of stuff that he should have dealt with at the time. But again, you can't tell people how to grieve. And as you say, what happens is tomorrow will be a little bit easier, then there'll be two steps back, then they're forward and then back. You know, but everybody's an individual and grief is different for everybody.
Has music helped? Because I know, obviously, you're a family that absolutely love music. My mum, it was all about music for us, and the songs that we were taught. And I know that you obviously taught Amy, and through her, she loved songs and old songs and Tony Bennett and everything. Has music helped you through it?
To a certain extent, I couldn't really listen to anything of Amy's for a year or two, and I didn't even I mean, it might sound absolutely ridiculous, but after about 3 months, I thought to myself, after Amy had passed away, I thought to myself, you know what, I haven't sung for 3 months, what have I got to sing about? And I sang a song, and it made me feel better. It was like I had an adrenaline shot. So, you know, music is an incredibly positive and powerful force. It's not going to bring anyone back. That's the problem. But it can make you feel... It can change the way you're feeling. And it's played a very important part in my life.
We met during lockdown summer, like when everything was closed and the streets were empty, and we walked through Camden together, where Amy is such a significant figure there. I mean, you know, there are pictures of her everywhere. And that's something that regular people, I suppose, don't have to go through. We don't drive around and suddenly come across pictures of our lost relatives. How do you navigate all of that?
Well, that's all the positive stuff. You know, you go and you see there's a new mural of Amy in Camden. Apart from it being a beautiful piece of art, whoever did it was brilliant. It means that that people love her and they still cherish her memory. You know, a couple of weeks ago, she was back in the charts, number 14. You know, so the people are still buying the albums and still thinking about her and sending her their love and everything else. But then there's the negative side, especially with the 10 years. You've got people creeping out of the woodwork.
How do people think that they can say all these things and that are they not being challenged on what they say?
I've had one or two not very nice Instagrams, you know, you killed your daughter, you know, you exploited, you know, that's what happens with stuff like this.
Yeah. Hurts though, doesn't it?
Well, it doesn't, because I know what it's like.
But this sort of dealing with this world, because, you know, we've just talked earlier, we've been watching films of the East End where you grew up, you know, and on Commercial Street, this Jewish family, you know, you lost your dad, as you say, when you were very young. You're kind of then the man of the family, but you've brought up children and lived a life. And suddenly then this music business world, which is so rife with, you know, with manipulating artists and exploiting artists and signing deals and things. You know, looking back at all of that now.
That wasn't the case for Amy.
Really?
I mean, I've got no axe to grind. I've got my own issues. There are things that I want to do and they don't want to do, and there's things that they want to do. You know, like any other normal business relationship. One of the things they're not guilty of is exploiting Amy, I can assure you.
Right.
They were fantastic with Amy. You know, you've seen the footage of Serbia, the Serbian gig, which is dreadful. Why did the record company let her go on stage? People don't understand how touring works. It's nothing to do with a record company. I've had people say, you let her go on stage. I wasn't actually there. If I'd have been there, she certainly wouldn't have gone on stage. She certainly wouldn't have gone on stage. People don't realise the sort of person Amy was. I was having this conversation and I'm telling her stories about Amy, like funny stories. People have got a black and white image of Amy. They don't know the person she was. For somebody who was struggling with addiction from maybe the age of 24, 23, they don't realise what a strong person she was. If she said, even when she was ill, I'm not doing it, nobody could convince her to do it, not me. Nobody could convince her to do something. And there were times she was going to Paris and she said, I'm not going. And we said, if you don't go, you're going to get sued. She said, I don't care, I'm not going. We got sued $150,000 or euros, whatever it was, because she didn't do a show that she should have done. Blake said to her, I don't want you. There was another show in Germany. Blake said, I don't want you to go. She was on the plane at London City Airport. She got off the plane and went back to be with Blake, another €50,000. So if she decided not to do anything, she wouldn't do it. So in other words, if she wanted to do a show, there was nothing anybody could do to dissuade her. And you mean to tell me, because Naomi, who works with the foundation now, was her stylist and best friend, said to her, you're not going on in Serbia. And Amy said, I am going on. Naomi was right and Amy was wrong. But it just shows you, if she didn't want to do anything, she wouldn't do it. Nobody could make her do anything.
Was she always that strong, though? I mean, like, in terms of her strength of character, was she always that strong?
Yeah.
Who did she take after?
Well, she takes after me in that regard. But that's, you know, but I'm not like her. I was able to discern. I was able to, you know, be sensible. And well, I never struggled with addiction. So I would say to myself, I'm not doing that. It's not right. You know, I'm going to go on drunk and make myself look like an idiot and everyone's going to be screaming at me and I'm going to let everyone down. So there was certain times when she wasn't able to do that. Her stubbornness was not right. I might have said this to you before. I'll just give you an example of how strong she was. They're not particularly great stories. One was when she was commissioned to do the Bond song for Quantum of Solace. And she was doing it with Mark Ronson. And Barbara Broccoli wanted to see her. And I went with her. Barbara Broccoli. You know who she is?
Yeah, of course. Right. Bond, yes. Bond, right. Cubby's daughter. Yeah.
So she turns up 5 hours late. You don't do that to anybody. You certainly don't do it to her, Barbara Broccoli, right? Well, I'm going, I'm just beside myself. I can't tell you what she was like, Barbara Broccoli. She was cuddling Amy. They were like, it was unbelievable how she brought out this. I mean, she was lovely. Unfortunately, she couldn't do the song because she was too ill. But she was saying, "Dad, I don't know what to do with this," because she knew I loved James Bond. So she was going, "Dun dun 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 dun." Quantum of Solace. Where did you get Quantum of Solace in that song? You know, so
it wasn't a great title. She was right about
that. She was. So, you know, we were laughing about that, and of course the other time, Lucian Grange, who was head of Universal, said to her, "What's happening with the album?" It's the one time he didn't put her under pressure. She was meant to be writing the album, and it wasn't happening. And he said, "Cause he knew they knew up there. You don't put Amy under pressure. There's no point." And all he said to her was, "What's happening? I want to see you." Now, there was a connection with Lucian because Nick Szymanski, who was one of Amy's managers, is Lucian's nephew, and she used to call him Uncle Lucian. Now, when Lucian Grange walked into Universal, everyone bowed down. Right, I'm telling you, they fell on the floor. He's now been promoted to, you know, I think he's next to God, he's the most important man in the whole world. And so we've walked in, again, 4 or 5 hours late. "Where have you been, Amy?" She's gone on, sat on his lap, give him a kiss. She said, "Oh, Uncle Lucian, don't be like that." You know, I mean, he was putty in her hands, putty. He says, "Get off my lap and play me the two songs you got." Anyway, so she's played a song called Addicted, which is a great song. "No, you can't have a song about addiction. No, it's on the Back to Black. No, no." Then she's played Black to Black. He's gone, "No, no, no. You can't have a song with black in it. It's too morbid. It's too boring. Why can't you go out and write a song about it's a nice day, the trees are green, the birds are flying, I saw this bloke and we fell in love and we had a kiss." But she said, "I don't write songs like that." Like, this is Lucian Grange, the genius. He's a genius. There was a similar scene in the Queen movie where they played Bohemian Rhapsody for their record producer, right? And the record producer goes, "It's an opera song. This not gonna. No one's gonna buy an opera song." Shows you what they know, right? Yeah. She wrapped people around, even when she was ill. She wrapped people around her finger, you know, but not in a bad way, in a nice way.
Could she do that to you?
No. I wouldn't fall for it. She could do sometimes, but I wouldn't fall for it. But they loved her. They loved her. So, you know, all this talk about exploitation.
It was her willfulness.
It's just, with this new woke society, it's the first thing that people say. It's like, Amy was a drug addict because obviously she came from a bad family. What else can it be? You know? And of course she was exploited by the record company. How else could it have been? Of course the management company exploited her. That's what they do. Because that's what they're told happens. And believe you me, in some cases it does happen. But it didn't happen in Amy's case.
Yeah, she was strong. So do you think, though, obviously if she'd lived, at what point do you think she would be at now with her career? I mean,
I have no idea.
But
I don't really want to dwell on it because it just upsets me.
Yeah.
But there was talk of her appearing in that James Bond film.
Oh, really?
And there was... Do you remember Mad Men, the series?
Of course.
They were in advanced stages of getting her, you know, on that show. and, you know, that there was talk about a film career. Who knows?
On that subject of film, because of course you're doing, there's going to be a biopic, and
hopefully it's slow at the moment, but
is this? I mean, you're involved with that in terms of the development of it and you know the journey that it will be. So this isn't going to be like somebody doing a book or anything without your involvement and knowing how it will be.
That's the idea. I mean, I have script approval. Well, actually, I don't have script approval. I have treatment approval. So I see the treatment. So the script approval is just to say that the family have been portrayed correctly. Amy's being portrayed correctly. And then whoever's writing the script, after that, they can do whatever they like. I'm not writing the film. Just so long as the script follows the treatment.
This is a role that it potentially could go to somebody that's completely unknown.
Oh, it's a star maker.
Yeah. So the idea of there being somebody...
I'd like that.
Much more than... I mean, I'd heard they've rumoured, what's it, Millie Bobby Brown, the girl from...
Well, no, Millie Bobby Brown, it is, you know, that's a good call. Because, first of all, she loves Amy. A very, very good friend of mine is best friends with her dad. So I went to see her. And it was like a really weird thing because... I watched her in Stranger Things,
yeah.
She was great in. And 11. I'm looking at her, I said, and then she's looking at me, I can't believe you're Amy's dad. Because there's videos of her on YouTube singing Amy songs when she was 4.
Oh, really?
I mean, she's so cute. Clearly she loves Amy. So, I mean, but we're not even at that point where you've got to start thinking about...
No. Do you think, because often, I mean, like with the Bohemian Rhapsody, Rami Malek didn't sing the vocals, whereas obviously Taron Egerton in Rocket Man did sing Elton. Would you think you'd prefer it if it was someone that sang her songs or that they used Amy's vocal?
I'd prefer them to use the vocals, but we'll see. You know, some of the things that, not with these producers, but with people that we were with previously... What's her name? Lawrence. What's her name? Oh, Jennifer Lomax.
Yes, yes, Amy. Yes.
Noomi Rapace. You know who Noomi Rapace is?
Yes, I do.
She looks a bit like Amy, but she's older now. Oh, I've got some fantastic Noomi Rapace stories. Fantastic. Do you want me to tell you?
Go ahead.
At the time, we were with a producer, Thomas Langman, who produced the great film The Artist, the black and white film.
Fabulous film. My mum loved that film.
But he had a family situation. His brother, they were all caught up in that Nice massacre when the lorry ran somebody, because he's French. Anyway, but that's beside the point. Anyway, Noomi Rapace has been in touch. She wants to play Amy. So I go and meet her. It's like talking to Ingrid Bergman, like the thick Swedish accent. I thought, this isn't going to work. She looks a bit like her. And she had a party at her house for all the family. It's really trying, really trying. So we went to the house and it was like she had her sister, who was very nice, her younger sister. But I got there early with my grandson, and she's shouting at the staff. Noomi Rapace is shouting at the, like, this is a very important night tonight because, like, we're all coming. And, like, but she didn't see that I was there. And then when she saw me, whatever. Very funny. Her house is full of Amy memorabilia.
Oh, really?
She's even had I don't know what she's done. She's got things on the wall and she's had these things made. And under the table, there's all Amy's, she's got a glass table. But under the table, it's like going into a museum. It's like it was a warehouse in, like, Neasden. She's got a big warehouse. It's a house now. And everywhere I went, she turned up. I mean, she's filming in LA. I'm in New York. So, and it is so hot in New York. I can't tell you. It's like boiling. So she says, I'm in LA. I'm coming to see you. Meet me at the Bowery Hotel. I said, you're in LA? She said, I'll be there in 10 minutes.
Ten minutes.
Right, so I get to the hotel and I'm with a friend who had just seen the film, The Girl with a Dragon Tattoo. She was in it, the original one. She's, I'm meeting, this was my friend Amy Rubinowitz, right? Who's nutty anyway. And she said, I can't believe it. Pinch me, I must be dreaming. I'm meeting Noomi Rapace. I said, listen, don't get too excited. Anyway, so we're at the Bowery Hotel. It is boiling. We get there. There must have been 500 paparazzi outside. No one takes my picture, right? I thought, a bit upset about that. Anyway, so in we go. They must be here for Noomi. Anyway, a car draws up. She gets out. She's dressed head to foot in Gucci. Oh, Chanel. She's got a chinchilla coat on. It is boiling. She comes in. She looks fabulous. She's got dark glasses on. Like, and she comes in and she's, oh, the paparazzi, they're driving me out. Well, that PR people obviously told her where she's going to be. She comes in and now she sees me. She's very nice, very, very nice. But my friend Amy is there, and she keeps looking at her and she won't even talk to this Amy, which is not very nice. You know, I really want to do this. And, you know, I think, I said, yeah, but, you know, one thing I'm worried about, Noomi, is the accent. Oh, no, I can have voice coaching. Don't worry about that. Anyway, meanwhile, I saw her in a film about a month ago. She plays a CIA operative. She's still got the Swedish accent and she's American and she's still in it and she's still got the accent. Now she wants to meet Amy's friends and she's hanging out with her friends and getting them down.
So she's, in her mind, she's got the role.
Well, but we figure out pretty quickly that she can't do it. So we came up with this idea. We came up with, because really we were struggling. I didn't want to do a biopic. So I came up with this idea with a scriptwriter that the film is about me not wanting to make an Amy film.
Right.
Right. Yeah. This is the idea. Not wanting to make an Amy film. I don't want to make the film. I'm not interested. So my character is saying, I don't want to do it. Whatever. So now what happens is this number one box office actress wants to play Amy. The problem is she's Swedish. Right. This is, we've
it's written almost the script. It's almost becoming a comedy.
Yeah. Well, it is. I've got the script at home. Yeah. And so this Swedish actress, who's not named as her, this Swedish actress has done all the things that she'd done. She came to meet me. She's hung out with Amy's friends. We've given her a screen test. She's hopeless because however she speaks in Cockney, in Amy's accent, she still sounds like she's from Scandinavia. And she's not a very nice person. She's not nice with her staff. And, typical Hollywood sort of stuff. And these things are going on and on and on and on. And until finally, because she's mixing with the family and she's mixing with the Amy's friends, she's beginning to understand what we're all about and what Amy was about. And she starts to have lessons and she starts to improve. And the final scene is her screen test where she's fantastic.
As Amy. Yeah.
She's fantastic. So I went to see Noomi with the script.
Oh, yeah?
I'm telling you, she'd have won an Oscar for this. It would have been brilliant. I mean, isn't it a great story?
Yeah, it's amazing.
Isn't it
hilarious.
Better than any biopic? Yeah. You go, another biopic. Pick Amy out and put Amy in the Ray Charles biopic or the Johnny Kitts. It's the same story. Ups, downs, ins, outs, right? Yeah. This is a fantastic story. She says, I wouldn't do that ever. You're just laughing at me. I said, I'm not laughing at you. I said, this is a great story. Don't you understand? She said, everything that we did together, we went to the... You put it in this script.
Oh, that's hilarious. That's the end of the film.
Yeah, I'm telling you. It was a great idea.
So now you can get another Scandinavian actress to play Noomi Rapace.
Yeah.
There are plenty of them. There are a lot. That is hilarious.
What
absolutely
a great film.
Brilliant.
Well, I might make that film in 20 years.
No, well, don't wait 20 years.
Well, we've got the biopic. We are after all of that.
I know, but it's different. It's a different. That's
Isn't
a different
lovely?
Story. I love that. I think it's absolutely hilarious because that must be something that's a constant for people who also have, they've got a famous child like a Freddie or a and well, not in Elton's case, because there wasn't in, but where there's their story, and then you've got these people who are kind of, this is just running away with them. I mean, when they did the Getty film on all the, you know, the Getty children and everything, every time they do one of those, somebody's going to get hurt in the mix.
I'll tell you another one. I was with Thomas Langman, the producer, and he works with Nigel Green at E Entertainment.
Yeah, of course that's where Nigel. Yeah.
Right, so that's where they get all the funding from. So he said, I'm taking you to meet Nigel. We're going to talk about the funding. And the other partner was Harvey Weinstein, this before all the business with him. And so we've gone to Nigel's offices in Mayfair, I think they are, Piccadilly. Very, very nice man, talking, chatting. So Thomas says, this is when we were doing the film with Thomas. That film was a brilliant film as well. We can't talk about films all day, but that was another brilliant idea where Amy goes back in time like a time slip. But no questions are asked. So she gets on a plane at Heathrow. She lands in LA. It's 1955. And then she hangs out with the Rat Pack and this happens and that happens.
Yeah.
It would have been fantastic, right? And it's one of those films where no one says, oh, it's 1955. How did I get here? You know, no questions asked or no explanations. It just was. Great idea. Anyway, so we've gone to see Nigel Green. Who phones up when we're in there? Harvey Weinstein.
Really? Right?
Harvey Weinstein. And he's gone, someone wants to talk to you. Hey, this is Jennifer Lawrence. Yeah. And I thought, well, I know what's coming here. I want to play Amy. God. Right, exactly.
Yeah. How strange.
I thought, yeah, you know what? I don't think this is going to work. But you don't want to be rude. Very nice. Thank you very much.
I love the way you go, you don't want to be rude.
No, well, that's hilarious. I mean, I wouldn't be rude anyway.
Yeah.
So this is what I'm talking about. This is one of the reasons why I didn't want to do a biopic. I'm about to tell you. So then Harvey gets on the phone. He says, Mitch, I've got great news. I said, what? He said, we've even got a script. I said, you got a script for Amy? He said, no, it's a script for Judy Garland. You know the Judy Garland film?
Yeah, the Renee Zellweger, yeah.
Well, that took years to do. He says, we've got a Judy Garland script. It's the same story. All you've got to do is put Amy in it, right? And I said, well, that's exactly why we don't want to do a biopic, because I don't think you can just pick Amy up and put her into Judy Garland's story.
No, they're not. Each person is an individual.
Exactly.
They're not, yeah.
But the process is exactly the same in all these biopics.
So how did you say goodbye to Harvey?
Goodbye, Harvey. Don't call me, I'll call you.
And now there's very little chance of that happening. Yeah. Oh, my God, no. Wow. So this has just been such a kind of helter-skelter ride, hasn't it?
Oh, it's been wonderful.
It's just so...
I mean, look, it's been... How can I put it? You know, I've always thought to myself, you know, you mix in with all these people and you know what? They're just normal people. Really, or most of them are. Some of them aren't. I'm there because Amy passed away. So everything is kind of... You know, other people will go, well, this is... You know, you're talking to Harvey Weinstein, you're talking to Nigel Green, you're talking to Noomi Rapace, you're talking to Jennifer Lawrence, you're talking to this one. It's all because Amy's passed away. So that and that's why I take it all with a pinch of salt. I'm not overawed by it. And the person that impressed me the most was Millie Bobby Brown. She's lovely. A normal kid, just like Amy.
Yeah, which is what she was.
And I hope she could, you know, when we first started talking about it, she was very young still. You know, but she's getting older, obviously.
Yeah.
And by the time this film comes out, God knows when that's going to be, she'll probably be about 80 by the time the film comes out.
No. There's nothing on the horizon in terms of a shooting date, start date.
The treatment's been done. Yeah. I haven't read the treatment yet. We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah. Well, it's got to have, I suppose, all the kind of the warmth and the family and the music and the growing up like that. And then, you know, because I remember early on when we met, very beginning, you said that thing about people saying, you know, why couldn't you have stopped it from happening? And you saying to me then, she was a grown woman. What was I supposed to do? You have children. you can't physically lock someone in a room. You have children, you see them, you hang out with them, you have a life with them, but you can't run that life for them. Does that play in your mind still? That, you know, do you ever think, if there was...
You know, the thing is when people are so... I'm not talking about you. When people bring that up, they obviously have no idea about addiction.
Yeah.
That's the first thing.
Yeah.
Because there are hundreds of thousands of families...
dealing with
throughout
this.
Throughout millions, well, maybe not millions, certainly hundreds of thousands of families in this country dealing with addiction within the family. It could be the mother, it could be the son, the daughter, the father, it could be anything. And they're all struggling with that. If only they could do better.
Yeah.
If only they'd have been a nicer family. Mm. If only they could have seen this 10 years earlier. You know, addiction is a very individual thing and it's a very lonely thing. And I've got an eating disorder, so maybe I am struggling with an addiction of some kind. And nobody can help me with it. You know, were you ever a smoker?
Yeah, of course.
Right. Could anybody tell you to stop smoking?
No, I had to just... Well, look, I'm vaping now, so...
Right, but yeah. I mean, but when you decided to stop smoking, you stopped smoking.
Yeah.
And whatever your mother or your grandmother and all the stories, you're going to die of lung cancer, your husband, whoever, nothing could make you stop smoking. The only thing that stopped you smoking was yourself.
Yeah.
And that is exactly the same as heroin, crack cocaine, alcohol, everything else. When people want to stop, they stop. Yeah. When they don't want to stop, they don't stop. You could have sat on her, and there were many times when I unfortunately had to restrain Amy. She wanted to go out and get alcohol and she was wobbling and she could have fallen under a bus. I'm not going to let her walk out in the street. And how horrible is that? And that's going on in families up and down the country.
Yeah. I mean, it saddens me a lot when I hear, I mean, Neil said that he heard today that, you know, obviously you still get this because of the documentary and things like that, that you get abuse over this. And knowing you and having spent time with you and, you know, through lockdown at other times, it saddens me that people can't see. Because I know that if I'd been a famous singer, my mum was a great singer. She was fabulous. And I know that if I'd had Amy's career, there would have come a time when I'd have said to my mum, you know, sing, come up and sing. You taught me all these songs. I only know them because of you. That's the relationship that I see between you and Amy. And that's why it makes me sad when, especially now with the anniversary looming,
you know, it's just, you can't listen to what anybody says I won't read it because, you know, I had one yesterday, you killed your daughter. It doesn't even bother me. You know, that person must be sick in the head. You know, they're all very brave. Meanwhile, I walk out in the street. I don't know why, but when I'm in New York, people come up to me, slap me on the back, shake my hand. You were a great dad. We love Amy. Thanks very much for bringing Amy into the world.
No,
you know, nobody's ever come up to me, to my face, and said, you exploited Amy, you could have done this, you should have done... Never!
Yeah, well, that just shouldn't be allowed, because, I just think it's an appalling way to behave, because I've seen you grieve, you cried sitting next to me, so I know that, and I know how you were with your mum and the influence that she had on Amy as well. So that's it. Can I just ask you, sort of finally, is going to the grounds, does that something that you do? I mean, do you go? Do you find that there is anything there?
Well, they're not there because my mum and Amy were cremated.
Yeah.
But we've got a marker.
Yeah.
With tiny bits of ashes.
Yeah.
Both of them didn't want to be put under the ground.
And that was something Amy talked about before.
Well, you know what? It's what happened was that I hadn't been well. And I was in hospital and I had septicemia and I didn't nearly die. Of course I tell people I nearly died, but I didn't really nearly die, but I was ill. And I said to Amy, I want to be cremated at the time. I want to be cremated. And she said, oh, right, okay, yeah, I'd want to be cremated too. And that's the only clue that that we had. So, of course, when she passed away, I said to Janice, she did say to me that she would prefer to be cremated. Otherwise, why would we have cremated her?
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's...
You've got a lot of stick for that as well.
Because, well, of course, in the Jewish religion...
Jewish people were cremated. Get, yeah. And it was a Jewish ceremony.
Yeah.
You know, so... I mean,
but she was too. I mean, yeah, it's a discussion, isn't it? And then you just have to go with what your instincts are as a father. Yeah. So where's the point? Is there any? Because I mean, obviously,
We're going on the 23rd to the grounds.
Yeah.
But we go every year on the 23rd, and then I take everyone for lunch.
Yeah.
And that's what we do. And like the first 5 minutes, everyone's crying, and then after that, we're all laughing about Amy's antics and all the wonderful times that we all shared together. Mm. I mean, she crammed a lot into her 27 years.
And that's what it's all about, isn't
it? You know, more than most people do in their lifetimes.
Oh, bless.
So, you know.
Well, that's really, I mean, yeah. Today you've given me a lesson, and that's one that I'm going to take forward. Tough times, but I think you handle them like a gentleman.
What are you going to do? You know, in your case, would you're clearly not debilitated anyway. Would your mum want you to be like really upset all the time?
No, of course she wouldn't. She always wanted me. She was always worried when I was sad, and that's something that I will over these next few months, and then hopefully when I see you again, and hopefully that will be opening of a film that doesn't star Noomi Rapace.
Well, maybe it is a star film that stars Noomi Rapace. That's a wonderful story. I love that story.
It's got legs, definitely.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Noomi Rapace, for those who don't know the Swedish actress, was the star of the film The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. But now aged 41, it's fair to say she is a little old to play Amy Winehouse. Clearly, Mitch will know who's right for the part when the time comes. I actually rather like the idea of his film about not wanting to make an Amy biopic and hope someone sees its potential. It definitely won't be Noomi Rapace. As a scriptwriter myself, I'd love to have a shot at writing Amy's story. It feels like a perfect fit for me. So, Mitch, think about it if the treatment isn't right. That we got to Harvey Weinstein, Millie Bobby Brown and Jennifer Lawrence in our chat was hilarious. But then laughter is always needed when you're dealing with loss. For Mitch, the adventures since the passing of his daughter are bittersweet. And contrary to what some want to believe, he knew his daughter very well and loved her deeply. So the cruel, accusing comments sent to him by anonymous strangers are totally misplaced and wrong. The best way to mark the 10th anniversary of Amy Winehouse's death is to listen to that girl sing and remember how much she contributed in a life that was jam-packed and ended too soon. Please join me for another edition of Bridget's Bagel very soon with me, Bridget Grant, and do subscribe and share as much as you can.
Dunkin' Bagels, smash in the coffee.